regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking once again about what's going on in Rhode Island. We had Senate Minority Leader Jessica De La Cruz with us on the show last week. Today, we're going to be talking with Tanya Pereira from Surplus Provisions and Firearms, a store that's been around for more than a decade, but has just recently, like within the past 5 days, gotten into the business of selling firearms. They had their, again, it's not their opening weekend, but I guess their opening weekend as a gun store last weekend, and it sounds like business was booming, no pun intended. But man, what a tough time to move into the world of selling firearms, right when one of the most popular products is going to be illegal to sell a year from now, right? Because July 1st, 2026 is when Rhode Island's ban on the transfer of so-called assault weapons begins. And if Tanya or one of her staff were to sell an AR-15 on July the 1st next year, they'd be looking at a 10-year prison sentence. Now, I've gone through some cases out of Rhode Island. I mean, I've seen repeat drunk drivers get less than 10 years. I've seen people who've been convicted of violent crimes, like a battery, get less than 10 years. But selling the most popular rifle in the country could land you in prison for a decade, starting on July 1st, 2026 in Rhode Island. So with that as the backdrop, I had the opportunity to spend some time with Tanya before the doors open on what I'm sure is going to be another very busy day, just getting her thoughts on the gun control bill that Dan McKee has signed. Again, what it is like to open up as an FFL in this type of environment, and what gun owners, not only in Rhode Island, but around the country can do to help preserve and protect our Second Amendment freedoms. Take a look and a listen. Tanya, thank you so much for coming to the program today. It's great to see you.
Thanks, Cam. Thanks for having us on.
And this is probably like the quietest time of the day, maybe the only quiet time of the day in your store right now, right?
Yeah, just about. We actually have guys in the back right now running paperwork. But this is the only time our store is quiet is when our doors are closed.
So Surplus has been around for how many years now?
So we've been in business since 2012.
Okay.
And in 2016, we opened our first brick and mortar. And then 2020 COVID happened, which was crazy. And then in 2020, I forget which year we are now. In 2022, we started our move. And then last year in 2024, we actually tripled in size in our new location. And this year we just had our release, our Locked and Loaded launch, which introduced firearms into our business. So we've had a few big moves in the last couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. When did you decide that you wanted to get into the firearms business?
So funny enough, we actually have wanted to do this for a very, very long time. And when we started getting involved with like ammo and we started looking at different firearms and what we wanted to do, COVID had just happened and we exploded. It was insane. I mean, it was just crazy, crazy business. So there was no way that we could bring it in at that time. We were just, everything was just absolutely, literally insane at that time. So when COVID died down, we started, you know, saying, this is what we want to do. We came up with a plan and we were just out of room at our previous location. So we started looking for other locations and then we came upon this location and the build out, it ended up taking a lot longer, just like everything else. It took a lot longer than expected. So then we sat here, we opened in November and then we said, okay, in January, we're going to start bringing in the firearms and then we will have that ready for, you know, like a spring/summer launch. So it's been in the works for a very, very long time. And it has been, everything you see here has been ordered since January.
Wow. I mean, and it sounds like this past weekend when you, again, kind of officially launched as a full service gun store. I mean, it sounds like the reaction from Rhode Islanders was overwhelming, right?
Yeah, it was absolutely crazy. We had people that were camping out since Wednesday night at midnight, pitching tents, camping out. We had a bunch of guys in the front of the store. Meanwhile, we're open 7 days a week. So we were conducting business as normal, shy of the firearms, up until Saturday morning.
Now, the reason why they were camped out is because you were doing a pretty great giveaway, right? I mean, you were giving away an AR-15, you gave away a shotgun, you gave away a couple of AR-15s, actually, right? How many guns did you give away this past weekend?
So we gave away three AR-15s, a Mossberg shotgun, a 1911, and a revolver. So we gave away six firearms this weekend.
Okay. And some of those went to the first customers when the doors opened Saturday morning. So that's why you had people camping out several days earlier, right? They were waiting to get their hands on some free firearms. And I got to ask, I mean, you know, I have seen your videos. You've done a great job of talking about not just your store, but the Second Amendment. You've done a fantastic job of alerting people to what's going on at the State House. I know that you were there with your yellow shirt earlier this year fighting against the gun ban that Governor McKee just signed into law. What is it like to open up a gun store right after you've been told that, hey, your most popular product, you're not going to be able to sell 12 months from now?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's very disheartening. I mean, we're in Rhode Island, which already is very anti-small business. And when we announced our launch, I mean, we had a little calendar going, and June 4th was when we were going to release the information of our launch. And on the 3rd is when the House passed the bill out of committee. And on the 5th is when they passed it out of the floor. So it was right in the middle of that happening. We didn't know what was going on. I mean, there's a very, very large investment into firearms. So we didn't know if something was going to happen right away or if there was going to be a delay or exactly what was happening. And it's such a shame that some of these politicians just don't listen to their constituents, because we are up there year after year after year, and we try to educate them as much as we can. And almost every single one of us on the 2A side always extend an olive branch to anybody who is uncomfortable with firearms or who's uneducated with firearms. We say, hey, you want to go to the range? We'll take you to the range. We'll show you this. You know, we'll break it down for you. Feel free. Come into the shop. We'll show you how the function of a firearm is. You know, it's not just going to go bang without somebody pulling the trigger. And, you know, some people have taken us up on that, and other people in the industry as well. And, you know, their minds end up changing. But unfortunately, those that are really, really, really pushing that progressive agenda, they don't want to hear it.
They don't. I mean, I was watching the debate in the Senate on my computer, not live. And, you know, it's interesting. We had Senate Minority Leader Jessica Dela Cruz on the show last week talking about this. And, you know, she had offered an amendment. There were a couple of amendments that were offered. One of them basically would have directed the Attorney General to come up with a report every year. How often are, you know, these quote unquote assault weapons used in crimes, and what crimes are they used in? Now, he already, I guess, does this for quote unquote gun violence, but this would have been specifically at the guns that were targeted by the Democrats this year. They didn't want that report. They didn't want that information. They didn't want to know. Right. And that to me was so frustrating, because, again, it just shows that this isn't about public safety. It's about public relations. It's about politicizing the exercise of a fundamental right. And they are perfectly happy burying their heads in the sand so that they don't have to acknowledge, oh, these guns aren't used in a lot of crime. The vast majority of people, the vast, vast majority of people who possess these firearms are responsible gun owners. They're using them for self-defense. They're using them for recreational shooting, for target shooting, for hunting. But they're not out there trying to assassinate people. I heard one lawmaker say the only reason to know these things is to murder people. I mean, if that was the case, then this country would be an outright war zone, right? Instead, we're looking at the lowest murder rates in the United States in 50, 60 years right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's a great thing that has gone around. I mean, for years and years and years, if gun owners were the problem, you would know it. Right. Because there's so many firearms in circulation with legal, law-abiding gun owners. And if we were the problem, you would know it. It would be very, very obvious. It's not on law-abiding citizens. It's on the criminals. And the criminals that are using the firearms, they're not getting them through legal means. They're getting them on the black market. And they're committing crimes. Criminals don't care about laws. They don't care. They're committing a crime. They're already breaking the law. So passing more laws to stop a criminal from breaking the law is going to do nothing. And it seems like pretty much common sense. But unfortunately, you're correct. It's very politicized. And, you know, there's some people that just want to kind of move up and gain some more power and move up politically. And they're using our rights in order to do so.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, I'm glad to know that, again, not only are you getting into the business, but that you are. I mean, do you consider yourself to be a Second Amendment activist?
I mean, I kind of just started asking questions one day when I couldn't get those questions answered. I started looking into exactly, you know, why is this happening and what, how does this happen? And well, why can they do this? And don't we have these rights? And that's truly how I got involved. There was nobody to go to. There's nobody explaining anything or what was going on or the whys behind anything. So I just started asking questions and gaining knowledge. And it's unfortunate that really everyday people just don't know what's going on behind the scenes at a local and a state level. And it's very scary because they do a lot of stuff up there. Whenever we're up there for any type of firearm bill, there's so much other legislation that they have with it that, you know, we hear throughout the session. And it's like, really, they're introducing that? They have, this is not a good idea. Does anybody even know about this? And they just pass so many things like it's nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And I think, you know, it's interesting. I mean, you talk about the Second Amendment sort of being that stepping stone to, you know, just greater understanding and greater awareness of not only how government works, but what government is doing. Right. Because if you're engaged on this one issue, yeah, some of us have blinders on and we focus specifically on the Second Amendment. But you're right. I think for in a lot of ways and for a lot of folks, that is that sort of introduction to, okay, here's how I want my government to function. Here's what I want them to be focused on. And now I know how the sausage is made and I don't like what I'm seeing here. So again, I can't thank you enough for all of your advocacy. I wish you the very best of luck with the move into gun sales. I know it has been a learning curve for you and your employees, but you think things are going well? We're almost half a week in now, not even the weekend, but you think things are going the way that you would like them to go?
I mean, even better. We could not have anticipated the amount of support from our community. And everybody has been so patient and understanding as we're going through, we're learning our processes and training our staff. Because with firearms, you can't train anything prior to actually going live because everything's serialized. So we've been working literally around the clock. We've been refining our processes and we want to be a very efficient and we want to have, you know, great customer service and have everything. We're doing things a little bit differently. So we're kind of shaking up the gun industry a little bit and the way that we display firearms, the way that we sell them, the way the whole customer experience is a little different with us. We like to kind of, again, do things differently. So that's what we're doing.
All right. I might have to make a drive up to Rhode Island and see how differently you guys are doing things at some point. But
yeah, Jessica, please do. We'd love to have
you. I'm sorry. I don't know why I called you Jessica. I guess I'm still thinking about Jessica Dela Cruz. Tanya Pereira from Surplus. Thank you again for joining us on the program. I know you've got a very busy day ahead of you, but I really appreciate you carving out a few minutes. And I hope we can check back in maybe in a month or two, see how things are going.
Yeah, that would be great. I look forward to it.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Tanya Pereira joins us from Surplus there in the great state of Rhode Island. My thanks to Tanya for joining us on the program and looking forward to having her back. Actually, we were talking off the air about a couple of the strategies that are being used to take back power from the anti-gunners in Rhode Island. So I think within maybe the next month or two, we'll have Tanya back in the program kind of talking about what those efforts entail. Right now, though, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a headline out of Indianapolis, Indiana. Seven sentenced after 240 guns stolen from Indy. 240. I mean, that's a pretty large amount, isn't it? Only about 60 some odd guns have been recovered, by the way, 61 out of the 240 as of May the 5th this year. According to the ATF, many of the guns turned up at crime spots in Indianapolis, Lafayette, Indiana, Gary, Chicago, Illinois, Oklahoma, state of Florida. There were 174 9mm semi-automatic handguns that were taken, 13 38 caliber revolvers, two 22 caliber revolvers, eight 10mm handguns, five semi-automatic rifles, 38 45 caliber handguns. And the individuals charged received a variety of sentences here. Seven individuals charged in connection with the thefts. Court documents say 33-year-old Bruce Williams and 30-year-old Ryan Hurt, who were both working at a shipping center, were the masterminds behind the scheme. They recruited others, including a 32-year-old Malik Mendez, convicted felon, Antonio Grant, who's 33, to help out. The stolen guns were then sold to people, including a 23-year-old Kevin Jones Jr., convicted felon Dominique Ellison, who's 37 years old, 27-year-old Zachary Doss, who then would sell those guns in illegal commerce to other people. All right, so the masterminds, Bruce Williams and Ryan Hurt. Well, Bruce Williams got 9 years in prison and 3 years of supervised release for stealing 240 guns, which to me sounds like a pretty light sentence. His co-mastermind, according to prosecutors, a 30-year-old Ryan Hurt, got just 4.5 years in prison and 3 years of supervised release. Meanwhile, Kevin Jones Jr., 3.5 years in prison. Zachary Doss, 2.5 years in prison. Dominique Ellison and Malik Mendez, both sentenced to 1.5 years in prison. Again, for being a part of this, not just gun trafficking ring, but a gun theft and trafficking ring. These were federal charges. Conspiracy to receive, own, store, sell stolen guns. Some of these individuals charged with possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. And I got to say, I mean, for as serious as this was, the fact that there are still about 180 stolen firearms that have not been recovered, less than a decade behind bars as the most severe punishment for this crime, I am perplexed as to why we saw a deal like this. And again, this was the result of a deal, I believe. I don't believe this was a case where a jury convicted these individuals and then a judge sentenced them to this light sentence. If that was the case, if it was the judge's discretion, I guess ultimately was, whether it was a jury trial or not. Again, I am at a loss as to why such a slap on the wrist would be given to such serious crimes. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen of the Day. And this, kind of a weird one, I'm going to say, from WYMT in Kentucky, which reports that a Pike County man was shot during a break-in and ultimately arrested for an attempted murder after an hours-long standoff with police. Now, oftentimes, we'll hear about these armed citizen stories. Many times a gun never fired, but the homeowner is able to hold an intruder at bay until authorities arrived. Apparently, that is not the case here. Kentucky State Police eventually arrested a 44-year-old named George Standifer after responding to a call about a person breaking into a home in Elkhorn City, Kentucky. According to the arrest citation, the Kentucky State Police contacted late Monday night with a homeowner saying that they had shot an intruder in the leg after he broke into their home. When they showed up, they found Standifer not in the house, but in an alley behind the residence. A Kentucky State Trooper wrote, "The subject had the gun and refused to put the weapon down. The subject stated that he was going to kill us multiple times." The troopers did not engage the suspect. Again, there was a standoff that lasted, I guess, a few hours. According to WYMT, the man eventually put the gun down. Troopers rushed him to get the firearm out of reach, at which point Standifer reportedly began to resist his arrest and while smelling of alcohol. After speaking with the family in the home, the troopers were told that Standifer lived in a camper next door. But a resident of the home says that Standifer came in uninvited and was making threats to kill the family. He actually, according to the resident, attempted to shoot the resident in the head, but Standifer's gun jammed. And so the resident was able to get his gun and shoot at Standifer, hitting him in the leg. Standifer then tried to shoot his gun at a woman inside the home, according to the citation. But once again, it failed to fire. That's when they were able to force him out of the home and call 911. Standifer has now been charged with attempted murder, wanton endangerment of a police officer, terroristic threatening, resisting arrest, disorderly conduct, menacing, as well as public drunkenness, basically alcohol intoxication in a public place. We'll see if there's more updates to this story. I am glad that the residents of that home are safe and sound. glad that they had a firearm to protect themselves. Glad that Stanifer's gun jammed or malfunctioned. And again, we'll see what kind of deal might be coming his way, or whether prosecutor's there and Elkhorn City will take his case to trial. All right. Finally, today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing. A good Samaritan in Florida who saved a woman who fell overboard while on the Peace River. And, you know, I saw this headline. I thought, well, how bad could it be? I mean, she fell overboard. It was a river. You know, guy came along and found her. No. According to the Punta Gorda Police Department and the Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, this woman had actually been in the river all night. She fell out of a boat late Sunday. She spent the night in the water trying to swim to shore, fighting against the tide, wind, and current. She had fallen out of her canoe, according to what she told emergency responders, so that she didn't have anybody with her. Nobody knew right away, obviously, that that she had fallen into the water accidentally. And it was thanks to a Good Samaritan, a boater, who found her and was able to pick her up. That's when the Sheriff's Marine Unit responded after the Good Samaritan actually plucked her out of the water. Taken to a local hospital for treatment, she last report in good condition, which may very well have not have been the case were it not for that alert boater who spotted her in the water and, again, able to take her to safety on shore. So, again, in the right place, at the right time, willing able to do the right thing. The anonymous Good Samaritan in Punta Gorda, Florida. We thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company, and it's also going to do it for this week's Bearing Arms Cam and Company, because I'm going to take tomorrow off, and then we'll be off on Friday for Independence Day. We will be updating the website, though. You know, we do anticipate not only perhaps the One Big Beautiful Bill being signed by President Donald Trump on Independence Day. We'll see if that happens. I'm not making any predictions at this point. I'm not making any predictions about what the language is going to look like. But we'll have an update for you, even if I have to cut vacation short. Also, we have been told, the Washington Post reported earlier this week, that the ATF is hoping to roll out 50 changes to rules and regulations on or by Independence Day. Now, originally they were aiming for 47 in honor of President number 47, but they found a couple of more, apparently, that they feel like they could get revised in time. So that's going to be a major story. If I don't write it up, Tom Knighton will be covering it, I am sure. But we'll give you all the details at BearingArms.com if and when those rule changes are announced on our nation's birthday. So, yeah, technically be off, at least for Cam and Company, but you'll see my byline at BearingArms.com over the next few days. And we'll be back at it on Monday. Cody Wisniewski going to join us from FPC Action Foundation. We'll be talking about some of the FPC's latest legal victories, as well as their calls on Congress to get going and not only pass, but improve the National Right to Carry, Constitutional Carry Reciprocity Act. Enjoy the rest of your week. Have a great Independence Day. Hope you enjoy our country's birthday. Look forward to seeing you again here very soon. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.